Speaking now to Kevin Oliphant-Smith, who's standing in Douglas North. Now, Mr. Oliphant-Smith, you have, of course, stood in other elections, most recently Douglas South last year, a number of local authority elections as well. Why are you coming back? Why do you want to take part in this election?
I've been involved in politics in the background since 2006. And as you say, I've stood for many local authority elections. I stood for my first House of Keys by-election last September for Douglas South. I stood for that because I lived in that area for 13 years and I was asked by many residents to put myself forward. Similar this time, I live in Douglas North now, and after sort of sitting back and watching what's going on within government, I felt like now was the right time to stand.
So what? Just to rewind previously, what's the attraction to Keys for you? What is it that makes you want to be an MHK?
I think from my experience, there's only so much you can do on the outside. I've been working with charities, lobbying government for many years now, working with MHKs as well, giving my advice and information. And
So what issues have you lobbied on?
Wow, Disability Discrimination Act, Equality Act, when they brought over the likes of ASOS and Dependability Limited, which was assessing disabled people. I fought for over 90 people in that with Social Security and with the government and tended tribunals. I could go on.
And now you think, you have previously, because you obviously tried last year to get in as well, you think that you can make more of a difference in Keys. So how exactly would you make a difference?
I think it's about somebody being elected who not only has got the experience of sort of hands-on work in government. I've worked for four government departments previously, so I've got the knowledge of government structure, but I'm also not afraid to stand up and call people out. I'm not scared of having being labelled a troublemaker in the House of Keys. I'm not going in there to make friends.
But if you're not going in there to make friends, how can you hope to form a consensus and actually achieve things rather than just shout from the sidelines?
Yeah, of course there is part of that. You've got to make sure you work with people, and it is a fine balance. But that doesn't mean forgetting about your own policies and where you're coming from in order to please somebody else.
Now, you mentioned your experience there. I'd like to actually ask you a little bit about that. What is your expertise? What is your role? What is it that you've done, the skills you can bring to the role?
So over the years, I've represented and worked with many charities. In that time, I've met with a lot of government department managers, and I've formed those relationships and retained those relationships. As well as that, I've worked for the Department of Infrastructure, the Department of Health and Social Care, the Department of Environmental, Food and Agriculture, and the Department of Sports and Culture.
But can I ask, doing what in those departments?
In the Department of Infrastructure, I was doing administration work. Department of Health and Social Care, I was working on the hospital wards, especially during COVID, as healthcare assistant. In DEFA, I was working in the microbiology labs. And the Department of Education, Sports and Culture, I work at the Villa Marina and I also volunteer at a primary school.
So do you think those experiences will hold you in good stead, do you think? Do you think you understand those departments more than a layperson?
I think so, because being in those positions and being in those departments has given me access to those heads of departments, those managers, those directors. Now, those people talk to me on a regular basis and give me the insight of what's going on, even from their position. Now, what tends to be the case I've found across government is they don't like taking complaints to the top. They don't want to raise their head above the parapet and be labelled a troublemaker. And over the years, it's been me that's been taking those problems to elected MHKs and saying, well, can you do something about this? Most of the time, no, it doesn't happen. They say they will and nothing happens. And it's become frustrating for me because I know the problems and I can deal with them. It's just I've got that wall. I'm having to put it through an MHK.
But do you appreciate that part of the role is that you're going to have lots of people coming to you and you won't be able to get a successful outcome for everybody?
Yeah, there is that. But I think people just want someone to listen to them. They want someone to recognise their problem.
And you feel current members don't?
No, I don't.
All of them?
Not all of them. But I've had over the last, since 2016, when I stood for council, even though I resigned from council, the emails kept coming, the phone calls kept coming. And my question was always, well, have you contacted your local MHK? And it was the same response. Yes, I have, but they haven't got back to me. They haven't done anything. And I just don't understand it, because most of the time I've resolved those issues as an unelected member. I've picked up the phone, I've spoke to that government department and sorted it.
Well, I have to ask you, we're just going to go back a bit on your record in those elections, because we have to put this to you. You say you fought for people on the outside, but when you have actually put yourself forward, you haven't been successful, not just in Douglas South, Maloo commissioners as well, and you were in Douglas Council for a very short period.
Yep.
Now, if the public haven't backed you then, why should they back you now? Why do you think they would back you now?
Well, I think, you know, honesty is the best policy, which is rare from a politician these days. You know, every event that you go through, you grow, you learn, you develop. And sometimes timing is just not right for that person. Since 2016, I've gained a hell of a lot more knowledge. And yeah, probably 2016 wasn't the right time for me.
But if you can't do a short stint in Douglas Council, well, you know, how are you going to be in a national parliament?
Douglas Council is very, very different. For a start, I went in there being the fresh, youngest person in there. Now, unfortunately, I wasn't welcomed, as I'm sure I wouldn't be in the Keys either. At the time, I was a lot younger, and I should have stood my ground, really. But I was treated like a child very much by the other members.
Do you regret not sticking out your ground? Because some might say, well, if he was serious, he would have stuck that out and he would have grown into the role, and that would have been a good experience for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I do regret that. And unfortunately, it wasn't good timing for my life either. I was going through a divorce and child custody things as well. So it probably wasn't the best time to stand, in hindsight.
Well, we'll move now to your policies. You have mentioned to Max Radio, affordable housing, education and improving health services are your key priorities. We'll start with affordable housing. What would you do to improve that situation? What exact policies are you looking at?
So at the moment, what's driving up housing prices is off-island investors buying up new builds.
Do you know that for a fact?
I've spoke to many estate agents. I've recently just got a house in Governors Hill. I've got friends who are estate agents. So this is kind of my point across the board. I've got connections in every single department and sector.
But that's anecdotal evidence at the moment. That's not hard evidence.
I mean, it is hard evidence, because I've had them saying to me they've had people literally look on their websites. This is during COVID. And because of the press of the Isle of Man during COVID, they've sort of gone, that's a great place. They've gone on the website, cash payment, bought it without even seeing it. You know, they've looked on the website and bought it.
So would you limit buyers from off-island if they aren't domiciled here?
I wouldn't limit that. I would limit the usage of the property. I would want to know what's the purpose of this purchase.
So no buy to let, for example?
I think it would have to be monitored and restricted in certain cases, because what we've got is we've got new builds being built. For example, 440,000 Hartford Homes recently advertised them to investors. They were built and promoted for investors. Now, those properties have now been purchased and they're being rented out for $1,600 a month. Now, not many people on the Isle of Man can afford that rent.
Well, do you think it's actually income as well that's a problem here, that people can't afford these rents?
You've got to be very careful, because if you start increasing income and putting the minimum wage up, things like that, the minimum wage does need to come up. But if you carry on putting it up and up and up, everything else is going to come up to meet that. So that's not really a long-term solution. You need to put restrictions in place to put the island residents first and to make homes for those residents, not investments for development companies.
Well, some have suggested that the simple solution to this problem is to build more homes. What's your answer to that?
I mean, I think, first of all, we should be looking at the brownfield sites. There's a lot of old buildings there, I think, that could be either knocked down and used. Those sites could be used.
But they are more expensive for people to develop on. How would you get over that issue? That's why people haven't advanced those sites, because they require more.
Right. I mean, I know there's a lot of issues being looked at now. There are a lot of greener new builds being looked at. And actually, there was one in the press recently that you may have seen, a gentleman that's built an eco home in Douglas. That's very, very interesting to look at. And the price he did that for was amazing. Unfortunately, again, I think that would be taken advantage of by the developers and they would knock a few $100,000 on top of that.
Do you think government needs to intervene more strongly in this market?
Yeah, to protect our island and protect our residents and their future homes, yes.
Well, moving now then to education. What is your key policy with education?
So again, education, with the likes of the primary schools, for example, I know that especially in Douglas, they are bursting at the seams. Even though we've recently had some new schools built in Douglas recently over the last few years, they're over capacity now.
So we need to build new schools?
Unfortunately, if we're going to promote the Isle of Man as a place to come and live and work, we need to make sure we've got an infrastructure in place for those people that come here, because no one's going to want to come in here if they can't get their kid into a school or a doctor's appointment such as this.
So the infrastructure around those schools, but new ones as well, to clarify, you do think we need a new secondary school in Douglas?
You'd have to. I mean, the schools that I'm talking about, I don't want to mention them, but there's no possible way you could build on them. They're literally stretched.
We'll move to improving health services. Now, you mentioned your work in the DHSC. Manx Care has come in. How would you improve health services?
Yeah, so I've got to be careful because I work for Manx Care at the moment. However, I've spoken to the board several times in the last couple of weeks, and there is a change being seen on the ground. Staff are, and this isn't from me, this is doctors and nurses, are feeling more listened to now. And, you know, Manx Care seem to be listening, which is really, really good. So I think it'll take a while before we see some big changes, but it is coming.
That's the cultural element, which from all accounts, everybody seems to be pleased with the changes. But the big question of funding really hasn't been addressed by government.
Yeah.
How would you go about funding health services in the future?
Unfortunately, health services is always going to be one of those things that it's always underfunded. It's always going to need more money. It's a bottomless pit. You could put more and more into it because there's so much that needs to be doing, as we've just seen with recent press about the ME and long COVID, which has been an issue for a long time. That's always needed funding. But there are many more things that issues that need to be funded that people aren't speaking out about at the moment. But they will come. They will come to fruition.
So is there a solution? I mean, what would you suggest? Would you suggest spending more reserves, trying to grow revenue? What would be...
No. I think the way to go is savings. I think savings can be made so that money can be allocated to different areas. So, for example, GPs at the moment, they have very limited power on the Isle of Man. So before you can get a CT scan or an MRI scan, you have to be referred to a consultant. So there's so many people at the moment waiting on consultant lists, which don't really necessarily need to be, because they're only waiting on those lists to get an MRI scan or a CT scan. At the moment, a consultant is the only person on the Isle of Man who can order you a CT or an MRI. But in England, a GP can order you that. So if a GP was able to order you an MRI, you got a good result, you wouldn't necessarily have to go and see a consultant, and that would free up the waiting list.
So do you think that improving processes and changing the delegation of duties and responsibilities, you could actually make those savings? Because, I mean, this is enormous sums of money, so even if those changes were made, do you not think there would still be more funding required?
As I say, there's always going to be more funding required, but it's about using that in the right way. It's about making sure the money is used correctly. And that there's no wastage, which we've seen in some other departments.
Coronavirus, the Isle of Man is over the worst of it, some might say. Some might say that there could be more to come, but we're in that recovery stage. You've mentioned the recovery from the damage COVID has caused in your opening statement to this sort of election process. But I want to ask you first, how has the government done over in COVID? How do you think they performed?
In some areas, very well. I think we could have avoided the last lockdown, personally. I think...
How?
I think we could have closed down quicker. There was early signs. Anyone with common sense... I mean, I was shouting from the rooftops. At the time, I was working for NHS England, actually. I was working for Test and Trace UK. And I was getting all the UK government emails telling me what was going on. And the Isle of Man was saying the opposite. And I'm sat there going, what are they doing? You know... So they could have avoided this last lockdown, and they could have avoided all these people and small businesses that have lost money, lost jobs, had to close businesses. It's not good.
Well, recovery then. How would you go about recovering from COVID for the island?
The economy?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, again, this is a difficult situation because there is no one-size-fits-all. But I think we do need to support our local businesses, absolutely, because if they start to go, and I know of some that haven't even publicised yet that they're selling, but they are selling.
So how would you do that? Extending the support or a new package?
It would have to be tailored. It would have to be tailored to the business, I think.
Don't we have that in most respects, though, at the moment?
No, we don't. We have a blanket support system at the moment, with the caveat at the bottom that we can look at things if you fall outside of this. The government always put that. But I think it needs to be more a wider scope of support. And I think maybe the Department of Enterprise could be involved with these businesses to see if they can maybe adapt as well to generate different types of income streams.
You've mentioned you think this current administration has proven their performance by sitting on their hands for 4 years and are only seen to be inactive when there's an upcoming election.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
I think for the government as a whole, yes. That's very much the feeling.
But how is it fair? They've done things. They bought the steam packet.
Well, that was early days, and that was on the cards.
It's in the 4 years you mentioned they were sitting on their hands, though.
Yeah, but I mean, how does that feel to the general man or woman on the street? I mean, yes, that's very nice, and that's good to secure our freight coming in, but that's not really helping the person on the street who.
So how have they failed? Have they failed to help the lay people, the man on the street? Is that the point you're making?
I think so. I mean, we've heard very, very little from government during those first 4 years. Some of the pledges that were in the manifestos they've been brought up every now and again, they've been touched on, but nothing's really come out of it. So we've got things like medicinal cannabis, which I think absolutely should already be done by now. We've got, you know, decriminalisation of cannabis, that should have been done straight away.
We have announced the start of an export business for cannabis on the Isle of Man.
Yes, in the last year of election, you're right, in the very last year, yep.
There were processes leading up to that point, I will caveat. But we'll move on from then, government performance. Douglas North, what's the big issue in Douglas North?
At the moment, Douglas North, I'm still knocking on doors, so it's coming to me every day. But mostly national issues, actually. Like a lot of the things I'm talking to you about, education, housing, neighbourhood policing is a big one. I've heard about the police not being seen in the outer areas of Douglas, and people would like to see more of a police presence. Petty thefts of bikes, for example, I've heard that quite a bit.
Would you back more resources for the police?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I think the police and frontline services in general should have a full support. And it would be good to see more communication from the Chief Constable with members of Tim Mould as well. I'd quite like to get a meeting with him myself, actually.
Throughout our conversation, you've talked about things you would invest in and you would spend on. Can you seriously expect to deliver all that with the money available to you?
Well, of course, these are all things that I can say, this is what I'm about. The next job would be convincing other Tim Mould members to get on side with me.
What if you get in there and you realise there actually isn't the money to deliver on your promises? Will you be honest about that?
Absolutely. That's one of the failings of this government, the communication and transparency with the public.
But do you accept that by being in there, you might be privy to things that the public and other people, lay people like yourself, wouldn't understand until you're in there, until you're able to see that information?
I'm used to that. I'm privy to things now in government departments that the public don't understand and aren't privy to. And it's difficult for me, actually, because even being under contract, there's things I'd like to discuss with the public. But of course, I'm under contract. I can't.
So do you think you'd be able to be honest with your electorate and still pursue effectively the aims you've outlined then?
That's actually one of the reasons I've stated that I will not stand be interested in going for a ministerial role, because I feel once you're in there, you're compromised at representing the public constituents.
But you also don't get to make the big decisions.
You don't, but at least you can have an effect on the ministers that are in there, and you can be true to the residents, you can be true to the people who voted for you. Now, the other thing that I haven't mentioned is this is the first year that no one's mentioned this on the press, I've noticed. This will be the first year that the new salary comes into effect for the newly coming in MHKs, which was put through last year.
Will that rebalance scrutiny as it's intended to do you think?
I don't think they should have had the pay rise. I don't agree with it. I personally would be pushing for a lower salary for MHKs. And if elected...
Isn't that just a populist move, though?
No, well, this is the thing. I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. If elected, the first 12 months, I'll be giving 50% of my salary away to the Manx Solidarity Fund to help people struggling.
A brave commitment. Now, we're coming very close to the end of our time. So, Kevin Oliphant-Smith, finally, why should people vote for you in 30 seconds?
I think people should vote for me because I've got experience with hands-on in the government, rolling up my sleeves and getting involved. I have represented the public in many different roles, and I am honest and transparent and will always do what's best for the constituent.